Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC on Earth Day's 40th birthday. What does it mean to be an environmentalist? What does it mean you think about and care most deeply about? Saving the whales, because non-humans have rights too? How about fighting poverty in the Bronx? The early Earth Days had a lot of imagery of forests and oceans and included lots of camping trips and recycling, but that left a lot out. When I went to Kenya, for example, there was a tension. So-called progressive Westerners got all watery-eyed about going on safari and protecting the zebras and the wildebeests, but the Western environment lovers barely noticed the people of Kenya or ever learned about the gigantic environmental challenges to human life and health, like malaria borne by mosquitoes and diseases from unsanitary drinking water. My own environmentalism has evolved over time through experiences like this. I got turned on to environmentalism by loving to hike and getting into wilderness protection. By 10 years later, I found myself going to grad school for environmental science, but in a school of public health, where we studied cancer clusters from toxic waste sites and the asthma epidemic being exacerbated by too many polluting bus depots concentrated in Harlem and things like that. It was a far cry from backpacking in Yosemite. But as we celebrate all those things on Earth Day, we can also ask, is the movement getting its priorities right, and is it inadvertently segregated by race and class? Here is a historical audio clip of a CBS News report on the first Earth Day 40 years ago today in Philadelphia.
Fairmount Park in Philadelphia today is much like a rock music festival as a teach-in on the environment. A few older people, a few blacks, and some of the poor, but mainly white, middle-class young people, as much aroused by the music as by the damage done to the environment by pollution. This is Philadelphia on Earth Day.
Welcome, sulfur dioxide. Hello, carbon monoxide.
Who sings songs to sulfur dioxide and carbon monoxide anymore? I don't know. Maybe it's been replaced by carbon dioxide. But that was CBS News on the first Earth Day, April 22nd, 1970. How far have we come from that? New York Times.Earth blogger Andrew Refkin is still with us. And we also welcome now Omar Freya, former founder of the Green Worker Co-op in the Bronx. Omar, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me on the show.
And so tell us, first of all, your... tell us about the Green Worker Co-op before we explore the issue that I raised. What do you do and how are you celebrating Earth Day?
What we do and how we celebrate Earth Day is what we do. We believe very deeply that our work is killing us. It's killing us and the planet, and that there are communities that are being disproportionately impacted, and those are working class communities of color, primarily in the U.S. and around the country. In the community we come from in the South Bronx, we believe in... we are based in creating businesses that are actually able to improve environmental conditions, that provide work for people who need it, and that are actually able to model a new and different kind of economy that is worker-owned and believes and practices the principles of democracy that we all appreciate.
As you look at the movement, either the history or the current status as a whole, do you experience this race and class tension that I mentioned when I was in grad school, they used to call it the white wine environmentalists versus the beer environmentalists. That's one framing. Does that analogy or anything like that work for you to define anything important?
Well, absolutely. You know, I grew up watching all of the nature shows before the Discovery Channel on Nova and others, and appreciating museum exhibits and a fascination with science. But I didn't see myself, and I didn't see my community. I didn't see people in the context of what the environment was. And growing up and being active in the environmental justice movement, those of us who are on the ground, who are living in communities in the South Bronx and Cancer Alley in Louisiana and other parts of the country, you know, where we are ground zero for all of the polluting industries, we recognize deeply that there would be no global climate change as a problem if it weren't for the fact that a long time ago it was okay for certain communities, for working class, poor communities, communities of color to be the places that could be sacrifice zones, where you could have waste facilities and others that would be allowed to do their thing. So we've, you know, we don't see sustainability or environmental protection as a possibility if there's no social justice. And there's no social justice if there's no democracy.
All right. We ask people to call in with the failures of the environmental movement and what about it leaves you cold or skeptical. Rosemary in Princeton, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rosemary.
Hi, Brian. I'm very dismayed about the failures of, you know, the sort of bigger efforts like Copenhagen and Kyoto. And in terms of how we're sacrificing poorer people, we're still doing that. For example, there's a major environmental conference in Bolivia, and which is covered by no one in the media except Amy Goodman, bless her. And they're losing indigenous peoples in the mountains because their glaciers are evaporating, you know, very quickly. So although I commend all of the many, you know, the many accomplishments, I think we have to look beyond clean air in New York City and realize that we're destroying the entire planet.
Thank you very much. Phil in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Phil.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I guess I've been paying very close attention to, for 40 years, to the discrepancies between our cultural ideas of how nature works and how it actually does, that in nature the purpose of growth is to get to the point where you complete and perfect things rather than continue multiplying. And another place where the cultural myth...
Is that... That could start about a week's of... worth of discussion.
Absolutely.
Is that the purpose of nature? But go ahead.
Well, no, but it does. Anything that nature perfects begins with the end of growth. The point, though, is things like believing in efficiency for reducing resource use has for 150 years by a wide variety of scientists been clearly understood to be more contributing to increasing resource use, because, and the secret reason that somehow gets missed, is that efficiency is mostly used for productivity, and the central purpose of productivity is to make profit for multiplying business. And it plays right into why the economy keeps growing, even though we make, and in the past 40 years, we've doubled the efficiency of the economy.
If they have, if human beings can invent things that make the economy grow and grow and grow and grow without destroying the earth, would that leave you happy or still dissatisfied? Because there's something about that capitalist enterprise of growth that is wrong for you.
No, that's the point. I'm not talking about cultural imperatives. I'm talking about physical processes.
Mm-hmm.
And the physical process is that efficiency makes it easier for us to use resources, so we use more of them.
Phil, thank you very much. And Terrence in Morristown, you're on WNYC. Hi, Terrence.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for letting me on. I guess you have two things. One is on the issue of where the environmental movement leaves me cold, and I actually have been working in land conservation for 10 years. It often we make the, you know, the perfect the enemy of the good and let practical good solutions fall apart because we are working on ideals that will never come to be. That's one point. Second point, on the urban class issue that you've referenced, actually, I do see walls breaking down. You know, and I, on this issue, I point to the urban gardens in New York City, the formation of the Brooklyn Queens Land Trust. I'm going today to work on a trail in honor of Frank Parker, one of the great conservationists in New Jersey, who thought that we ought to be building playgrounds and parks in Newark in addition to preserving watershed in New Jersey. And he started the Trust for Public Lands Playground Program there. So people of good conscience are bridging gaps, and as much as some pieces of the environmental movement may be leaving me cold, I still remain very optimistic.
Terrence, thank you so much. Andrew Revkin from Dot Earth.
Well, so many threads here, but Phil, the Phil you just spoke with is Phil Henshaw, who's a great commenter on my blog. In fact, the only reason I know is because I met him. We had a blogger conclave at the Dot Earth conclave at the Times, and he's getting at a key point that actually relates to what Omar was talking about, which is there really aren't environmental problems. There are environmental impacts of human activities and human relationships. And so, and when I wrote The Burning Season about Chico Mendes in the Amazon rainforest, who got murdered fighting road projects, it was the same issues that Omar is talking about in the Bronx. In other words, he was seeking a development model there that considered the needs of people who were already living in the forest, meaning living in that environment and doing productive work, and who wanted to sustain their lifestyles. So we have to start. I think one thing that we need to do is get away from thinking about all this as an environmental issue. There are social issues with environmental impacts. And that's at the global scale, local scale. And then you break it down and you can start to move forward.
And when we look at the history of this, Omar, and human impacts, I mean, you talk about green-collar jobs, something that your organization is all about. Environmentalists and labor unions are two branches of what are sometimes seen as progressive politics that haven't always seen eye to eye. Various blue-collar unions, along with the employers who hired them, often have seen environmentalists as part of a liberal white elite more concerned about pristine fields than working class jobs. On the other hand, public health environmentalism has also been about occupational safety, factory workers, farm workers exposed to toxic chemicals and things like that. So where do jobs and environmentalism connect or sometimes disconnect for you?
Well, they connect on the ground when it comes to the communities that have been impacted by environmental problems. And oftentimes a company will come in or a state agency will come in and say, well, you know, we'll put in this plant or we'll put in this this waste facility and there are going to be jobs at the end of the day. And so it's accepted. You know, it's accepted on a local level and it's also accepted nationally that it's okay to sacrifice public health for the sake of an economic development. But what we define as economic development is left very vague and left very open. And there's a very, we give a carte blanche to anyone who offers any kind of business opportunity. What we are about at Green Worker is changing that model and creating a different possibility, imagining a new way of structuring an economy and imagining a new way of setting up a business. Because what we see is a major problem with how our economy is set up when we talk about the environmental impacts of our operations is that there is no real system of accountability that would keep a business from actually negatively impacting their surroundings, from polluting, basically. You know, we put our trust in a government, and whether a local government or a federal government, to be our protectors. And on both levels, on all levels, they failed us, you know, incredibly. In some cases, you know, there have been improvements. But for the most part, we've seen a great degree of failure. So what we really recognize is that there has to be a different way of doing things. We love this idea about worker ownership because it creates a direct connection between the owners of an enterprise and the community that's being impacted. And that's the real experiment that has to be played out. We're all about experimentation and saying, what are the kinds of economic structures that we can create that are different, that, you know, haven't really been implemented?
But one could say that's an interesting and maybe radical economic model, workers owning the business, but it doesn't have anything directly to do with environmental outcomes.
Oh, but it absolutely does, because you know, I look at a place like Hunts Point in the South Bronx has a company called the New York Organic Fertilizer Company, processes sewage sludge, you know, big red and white smokestack, you know, just a few hundred yards from public school and a large residential community of about 10,000 people. It's owned by a parent company that's based in Houston, Texas. When the board meets, when the shareholders meet in Houston, Texas, they have absolutely no connection to what's happening in the community. If that business were actually owned by the people who actually worked in that plant or who lived in that community, you would have a very different type of decision making that's happening.
It reminds me of something else that one of my colleagues in environmental sciences grad school once said. He said, everybody talks about not in my backyard. I say in my backyard, because if everything's going to be mm-hmm. in your backyard, then you're going to make sure you're not soiling the earth.
This gets right at this is the offshore drilling issue. I wrote on the blog not long ago about, you know, everyone's mm-hmm. up in arms about us offshore drilling here. But there's some, like Peter Mass, who wrote a book about big oil, saying we should do it here and do it responsibly rather than doing it in Nigeria.
Yeah, and this isn't pie in the sky stuff. I mean, what we're talking about, it's certainly, it's not very well known as a business model in the United States, but it certainly has a longer tradition in places like northern Spain in the Basque region or in Italy, in Bologna, in other parts of the world. And here in the U.S., we're seeing a growing movement. I mean, Green Worker Cooperatives has only been around now for a little over 5 years. going on six years now. And in that time, you know, we've been in the trenches talking about green collar jobs and talking about worker ownership as a different kind of a new way to structure businesses. We've created one business that's been up and running for 2 years, Rebuilder Source. They salvage building materials. They've had a great impact on the community. People love their operations. You know, you can go and get doors and sinks and all that great stuff that would have been thrown out, you know, and it keeps things in circulation. We've got another six that are in the process of development. And these are all businesses that are being started by local people. But around the country, we're seeing the model starting to spread. So now if you look at in Cleveland, Ohio, there's a new initiative called the Evergreen Cooperatives, a sister initiative where you've got large institutions, hospitals and universities that are saying, you know, we'll put our money locally and we'll invest locally, and we want to see these worker-owned businesses, mm-hmm. and we want to see them green.
One thing before you go. Omar and my guest Omar Freya, founder of the Green Worker Co-op in the Bronx, for Earth Day today, probably very important to you, Vice President Biden announcing a big chunk of recovery cash for retrofitting buildings for efficiency. The New York State Research and Development Authority will get $40 million of this, the largest such grant in the country. Does that help the Bronx? This is stimulus money.
There's always the potential.
You don't know yet.
We don't know. There's always a potential. And certainly there's always been a problem of money not winding up in the places that need it most. I mean, we're a small grassroots organization, you know, that's based in our community, based in the Bronx. And we are always looking for financial support. And that's a hint for anybody that's out there listening that wants to support this kind of work.
What's your website?
Our website is www.greenworker.coop. That's a .coop. For those of you who don't know, there's a new extension for cooperatives and co-op supporters. So that's greenworker.coop. You can check us out and donate online, and you can find links to our future cooperatives and others like Rebuilder Source that are up and running.
And listeners, if you don't remember that web address, we have links to Omar and usually all our guests on our show page at WNYC.org. Omar Freya, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We continue with New York Times.Earth blogger Andrew Revkin, and in a minute we'll bring in the filmmaker and, I guess, the star of one of the movies debuting at the Tribeca Film Festival, and it is about our guest's trip on foot through the Arctic. Stay with us.